This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions.
And this is Jerry Clinton from beautiful downtown Cottage Grove, Oregon, carrying a freshly brewed Night Transmissions number 62. I've got a new program for you tonight. Well, you know, new to us. It's a program which ran from 1952 to 1953 on NBC. It consists of 55 30-minute programs predicated on the notion that at some time in life, every man, every woman is a hunter or hunted. So hence, the chase. In every story, there will be a chase. The story itself may be an adventure story, or a crime story, or even a science fiction story. But there will always be a chase. The episode tonight is from January the 25th of 1953, and is called The Creeper.
National Broadcasting Company invites you by transcription to join The Chase. There is always the hunter and the hunted, the pursuer and the pursued. It may be the voice of authority or a race with death and destruction, the most relentless of the hunters. There are times when laughter is heard as counterpoint and moments when sheer terror is the theme. But always there is the chase. Sometimes our very pursuit of safety and security leads only to destruction. For one of the most exciting chase stories ever written in radio, the National Broadcasting Company now brings you Joseph Ruskall's famous thriller, The Creeper.
New York. The unknown killer, called The Creeper, has struck again, adding a third female corpse to his toll. Virginia Peters, a comely waitress, was found strangled to death in her third-floor apartment early this morning while her radio blared. As in the previous murders, a note was found scrawled on the wall with the victim's lipstick and the plea, "For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself." Police and...
Hey, why'd you turn it off?
It's awful. It's right here in this neighborhood.
Now let's see it arrested. It intrigues me.
Now don't go turning that radio on again, Steve Grant. I've heard enough. I'm out of my mind, for heaven's sake.
That's it. That's a good solid clue.
Now what is?
For heaven's sake. How many men ever use that expression?
Oh, shut up.
Okay, Mrs. Grant. Pass the biscuits, my little pigeon.
Pass the biscuits. Eat, eat, eat. Three women in 3 days murdered in cold blood, and right here in Washington Heights. I'm too sick to go out. I'm too scared to stay in, and the lock's broke. And you sit there saying, pass the biscuits.
Well, there's nothing wrong with my appetite, my love.
Oh, no, of course not. That's what cost you your job, a police force.
Some men drink to escape. I eat.
Escape what?
An ugly tongue. A beautiful face and a roving eye. In short, a wife.
Oh, so you're starting that again. You and your crazy jealousy.
Maybe that's the creeper's way of escaping. Who knows?
Oh, go ahead and get a divorce. Go ahead. Can I help it if men look at me? I don't know why you come home at all. Where do you go? What do you do with yourself? And where were you this morning? Why'd you come back?
To eat. And someday I'll lose my appetite for that, too. And when I do, my dear, there'll be no escape. Now I'm off again. Kiss? Still using stage lipstick. Wipe it off. How many times must I tell you? You're married now, remember?
Steve, wait.
Yeah?
At least go buy me my medicine.
Sorry, no time.
Oh, don't leave me here alone. stay home this afternoon. Please. I'm afraid.
Don't be silly, pet. Nothing will happen to you. You've got a doorman here, an elevator boy, Mrs. Stone across the hall, a phone. You're safe enough.
Yeah, but the night lock, it doesn't work.
I know. Now you can't lock me out anymore.
Well, it doesn't catch. Something happened to it since last night. Steve.
Get a new one.
I can't get a locksmith. I've tried all morning. Steve, please. Well, if I want to phone you, where will you be?
Oh, goodbye, sweetheart. Take care of your cold. If it isn't old Pearlie Morgan.
I hear you got thrown off the force, Steve.
Here you got thrown off the news, Pearlie.
Well, you heard wrong. I wasn't fired, I was just warned.
I wasn't fired either, just suspended for 3 days. Eating a lamb chop at Casey's at the time I should have rung in from the box at 162nd with all that trouble up there. And I'm away to headquarters now for reinstatement. I eat too much, my trouble is.
I drink too much. I hear you're living up in the Heights, Steve.
Yeah.
That's funny, me too. Hey, you're married now to a beautiful and lovely young...
you can say that again. Used to be on the stage, you know.
Yeah, I think I knew her. Wasn't her stage name Georgia Dixon?
That's her. I love that wench, but... women. How does a guy handle them? Maybe the creeper has the right method.
Thank you for taking the words out of my mouth. Who is the creeper, Steve? Any angle?
You tell me. I'll split the reward with you.
Okay.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you an announcement from the New York Police Department.
Hey, wait a minute.
Officials at Center Street have just released Jim Ellis. Jim Ellis, who was arrested in suspicion of murder yesterday, was the doorman on duty when the unknown killer, who has been named by the newspapers as the creeper, strangled his second victim. Since the third killing took place this morning, while Ellis was held in the city jail, Police Inspector J.M. Bradley ordered the Ellis release. Bradley warns, however, that he is still convinced that the killer, the creeper, is someone who either lives or works in New York's Washington Heights section.
Scene
of the crime in all three killings. New York residents are warned to lock all doors securely and to notify police of suspicious characters at once. We return you now to our program of music.
Yeah. What do you think of Inspector Bradley's inside job theory?
Nuts. Every janitor's a creeper. And as for that doorman, Jim Ellis, pure coincidence. Anyway, they released that Ellis. One thing, though, and I don't think even Bradley's put it together yet.
Yeah?
In all three cases, just before the creeper struck, the door locks had already been tampered with.
You don't say.
You got a theory?
Well, sure. I mean, take a note on the wall. For heaven's sake, in every case, for heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more.
And I cannot control myself.
Right. What man uses an expression like that? My dear fellow, the long and short of it is this. The creeper's a woman.
A ruse. Just like the height of the message on the wall. A ruse. 6 feet. And yet I'll lay odds the creeper's no more than a guy your height, say. Or mine. 5'9", just like us. You or me. Only crazy.
How do you figure that?
How do I figure lots of things? How do I happen to figure where the creeper's going to strike next?
How do you?
Well, the creeper's not smart. He's crazy. You play along crazy and you're one jump ahead of him. That's the trouble with Inspector Bradley. Why he's up a tree. You expect logical clues from a madman? You play along crazy, make out you're the creeper. What's your compulsion?
Go ahead, let's see.
All right. The victims are all redheads. Everyone. You've noticed that, of course. 3 in 3 days.
Well, now that you mention it.
They all lived in the Heights, right? Agnes Martin, Jane Kretzky, Virginia Peter.
Right.
What was the number of the apartment in each case? Agnes lived in 1A. Jane, 2B. Virginia, 3C. Don't ask me the why or wherefore. Don't ask me the logic. Just play on crazy. See what I mean? And see where he's going to strike next?
You mean...
The next victim of the creeper lives in the Heights. She's a redhead. Her night lock's been tampered with. And she's going to get hers today, and her apartment number's 4D. Well, what are you staring at me for?
My wife's a redhead, Pearlie. We live in the Heights. Our apartment number's... Ah, you're just a boozy reporter. Your apartment number?
That's 4D. I told you.
Oh, 4D, of course. I'll have it delivered. I was busy admiring your lipstick, Mrs. Grant. I've nothing like it in stock. 4D, I should have guessed it anyway.
Why?
Face is the number. Believe me, since you've moved into the neighborhood, Mrs. Grant, for me it has a very special number. Like Double Dandy Delicious Dream, 4D, you see?
Oh, go on. I'll bet you tell that to every customer. Female.
I? A lady man? Like the creeper?
Oh, I'm
sorry. Say, what's going on in this block anyway? Raw nerves, you can't joke. The creeper, that's all I hear all day. It's mass hysteria. There ain't any such animal.
Oh, you don't think so?
Of course not.
What about the note that was left in the apartments of those dead women?
What note?
You know, one that said... Heaven sake,
I assure you, Mrs. Grant, it is a fairy tale for circulation of the tabloids. I'll send your prescription up with the boy.
No, I'll just wait here for it.
Well, it'll take some time. You should go right home and stay there if you're just getting over the flu. I'll deliver it myself. It'll be a pleasure.
No, please, no, don't bother.
Oh, it won't be any bother. Believe me, Mrs. Grant. It won't be a bother at all.
No, I'll wait. I may not go right back. I don't want to be there all alone.
Very well, suit yourself. Have a seat.
Yeah, thanks.
For heaven's sake, stop me before I kill more.
What?
I cannot control myself.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. That was the note I had referenced to. Wait, Mrs. Grant, your prescription.
I just got scared, I guess. Well, since all these awful murders in the neighborhood...
Yes, isn't it terrible? I'm simply frightened to death myself.
Oh, you walking home?
Yeah, I guess so.
Fine, I'll go with you. It's good we live in the same house.
Yeah.
At least if I have a double lock, but... Well, the night one doesn't work.
Oh, really?
I have a chain lock besides, and still
well,
I'm
the
scared.
The way it is, I just sit and shiver when there's a sound at the door.
I can't get a locksmith. They're all so busy. Mr. Frank on the corner promised to, but he didn't seem to know when. And
why are they all so busy?
Well, my dear, because every woman in the neighborhood's changing theirs, too. It's simply a nightmare. But don't you worry. We'll stay together this afternoon till our husbands come home. Think of it. We've never visited, though we live right across the hall from each other. Now, isn't that like a big city, for heaven's sake? Or would you rather I dropped in on you?
Oh, well, I
make it yours, then. My, isn't it horrible? The ghastly things they're saying, the theories. One doesn't know what to think next.
Oh, you believe the latest?
The latest? That maybe it's a woman, the creeper.
A woman?
Can you beat it? I can't imagine how in the world the police figure that, for heaven's sake. Can you? Can you, Mrs. Grant?
Well, I don't know. I was just thinking of something that my husband said.
Oh, I can't see where a married woman now. If her husband was faithless, then perhaps only weak and had no will of his own against a vile, cheap thing in skirts. If the wife say was merely getting at those female homebreakers now. Well, I can understand such a theory, because you take my husband now. You've met Mr. Stone, haven't you?
Mrs. Grant. Why on earth are you staring at me like that, for heaven's sake?
Mm-hmm. I don't feel well. I gotta get home at once. I feel faint.
But Mrs. Grant, what are you doing?
Good afternoon, ma'am. Not shopping?
Oh. You're the new doorman.
I'm just relieving the regular man. Nice weather out.
Yeah.
Help you with the package?
No. No, thanks.
Well, let me ring the elevator for you.
Oh, no. You don't have to trouble.
Oh, no trouble, ma'am. There.
What happened to Charlie?
Charlie?
Yeah, the regular man.
Oh, I'm just helping him out. I'm from the next building down.
The next building? I didn't know they had a door.
Yeah. Funny how folks never notice some people who are around all the time. I noticed you. I guess everybody does.
When will the elevator come?
You better let me take those packages up.
No, I can manage.
Here, I think that milk bottle may slip out. Let me give you a hand.
No, don't touch me.
Gee, I'm sorry. Well, it's nothing to be frightened about, ma'am. I just wanted to help.
All right. What a mess.
Oh, I can clean that up in a minute. There must be a mop in his room closet here. Don't you worry. I can get this fixed up in a minute. Yeah. Say, the grocery delivery man should be around soon. Should I send him up with another bottle of milk?
No, I don't want him to come up. I don't want anyone. I just want to be left alone. What's keeping the elevator?
You're in apartment 4E, aren't you?
Yeah. How do you know?
Doesn't take long.
Why doesn't this elevator come?
Coming now. Terrible things, man, are happening.
What?
The creeper, you know.
Oh.
Come on up.
Yeah.
Oh. Up and down. I shake the ups and downs of life.
Yeah.
And I'm a living milkshake, Mrs. Grant.
Well, what's wrong, Jimmy?
I'm stuck. Imagine getting stuck between the third and fourth floors with a production like you.
What?
Yeah, this is something every elevator jockey dreams about. Especially me.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm just trying to return the spirit of that little smile you give me all the time. That's all.
Oh, get this elevator going, Sonny. You want me to report you?
Okay. Can't you take a joke?
No.
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood that smile you always give me. Maybe I shouldn't ought to smile that way. Yeah. Fourth floor.
Well, let me out.
What?
Let me out.
Oh, now, listen. You don't say anything.
Let me out.
Okay. Hey, yes. I drop in later. Will you be more receptive?
Oh, thank goodness it left. Must have gone out of my mind. Oh, where's my key? Where is it? Oh. Diamond lock.
Hello, is the locksmith in yet? I want to know how soon I can get my lock changed. Yeah, I said, of course, I left my order. This is Mrs. Grant. Yes, in 4D. Yes. Look, yes, you know, you just explained to me, but I know he's very busy.
Hello, Jack.
I'm...
You want the whole house to... Yeah, it's better.
What are you doing here?
I'm playing along crazy.
Oh, what are you talking about? How did you get in here?
Alias Pearly Valentine. Now, don't worry. You haven't a thing to worry about now. I've come to protect you. And give me the phone.
Hey, listen.
Hello? Never mind about the lock. Thank you. All right. Sit down. Make yourself at home. I've been waiting here for you. Long time no see, George.
What do you want, Pearly?
Me? The headline. Your husband wants to. Wants I should keep an eye on you.
What's that?
Sure. You didn't think Steve and I were acquainted, did you? Oh, yeah, from way back. I just met him at a bar.
I don't believe you. What do you mean, keep an eye on me?
Oh, just in case creeper.
No, I don't.
Have you heard of the character?
You're mad. You've always been mad, Pearly Morgan. Where is Steve? Why did he send you here? Well, what are you doing here?
I told you. Playing along crazy. You got
it? Oh, you're drunk now. And you're getting right out of here. Nothing but a no-good room.
And you're nothing but a no-good... you finish it. When I took the drink, it was to drown you out, and you know it. Well, I'm still a rum pot, Angel. Which means I haven't got rid of you. Yet.
Get out.
You little two-timing redhead. You're all the same, you redhead. Haven't changed, have you? Even a wedding ring can't do that to you.
Why, you...
Oh, don't play the innocent.
Look, I'm warning you. You get out. Or I'll call the police.
Stay where you are.
Hey, Pearly. What are you doing with that gun?
I wouldn't pick up that phone if I were you. You see, there's a big reward for the creeper. And a heck of an exclusive. And I don't want to share it. Sit down, darling. Just play along with me while I play along crazy. Sit down. That's it. Like we're expecting company. Oh, I must be crazy doing this. Why wait here for the creeper? Why not 100 other streets, 1,000 other apartments, 1,000,000 other dames? Because I'm riding my hunch. Let's have some music. Well, don't just sit. Let's have some music. Turn on the radio. Let's dance. Not good. Now, let's dance. Give me your arm. Let's dance. Like old times. Around and around like my brain. Why are you trembling? I still love you, little fool. Ask me why. I love you. I love you, you lovely redhead. I could kill you and you deserve it. With the radio on, you could scream and no one would hear. I could put my hand on your throat like this and I could scream. Stop it. I'm here to protect you. Now stop crying. Cut it, I say. Cut it out. I can't stand it. I never could. Oh. Okay, you want me to leave? All right, I will. It's your funeral. Where's my hat? No. In a few minutes, there'll be a knock or a ring or the door will just open. And you'll be lying in a pool of blood like the other three.
Oh, no.
Goodbye, my worthless. Give my regards to the creeper.
Look in his eyes like a madman. What if he comes back? He wants to kill me. He wants to kill me. Someone wants to kill me. I gotta lie down my head like I had splitting neck. Just trying to frighten me. Jealous. Fight, that's like. Yes, that's what it is. Like the other three in a pool of blood. Any minute now there'll be a knock. Or a ring. Oh. Yes?
This is the doorman, Mrs. Grant.
Yes?
The druggist is here with the medicine. Shall I send him up?
My medicine? Why, yes. No. No, no, don't let that man up.
Want me to bring it up?
No, no, no. I'm perfectly all right. I don't need it, you hear? Don't you dare come up. Don't anyone. Please, please, I must have it changed right away, my lot, my door lot. Yes, and this is Mrs. Grant. Yes, I do want it, of course. Like anyone could get in, anyone, and they want to murder me, but I don't know who. It's a creeper. Oh, you come right away. Thank you so much. Thank you, but hurry, please. Hurry up. I just got in my mind. Oh, thank God.
Like the other three in a pool of blood. Any minute now, and now I throw up a ring. Who's there?
It's me, dear Mrs. Stone.
Oh, what do you want?
I've been worried about you. Are you ill?
No, I'm all right, Mrs. Stone. I'm feeling fine.
Open up, dear. Don't you want me to keep you?
No, no, thank you. I was just... Stop it!
Do let me in, silly.
No, no, go away. I'm going to sleep. Just go away. Hello?
Hello, Georgia. Are you all right?
Oh, Steve. Oh, dear, Steve. I've been frantic. It's so good to hear your voice. Where are you?
At headquarters. I'm coming right home. Sweetheart, is anything wrong?
Oh, no. Okay. No, not now. Not when I hear you, Steve. I don't know what came over me. All day I've been imagining things. Silly, my nerves, I guess.
Forgive me for this morning, darling. I wasn't myself. My job had me down, but now everything's all
good. Of course. Forgive me, Steve. But do you know what I've gone through today? The most dreadful statement that... Hey, Steve, did you send someone here today?
Pearlie Morgan?
Oh, then you did.
To keep you company. Isn't he still with you?
Well, no, I just got rid of him.
I wish you hadn't. He's an all right guy. Smart reporter. Lives in the neighborhood, too. Honey, it sounds cockeyed. I mean, this fellow's theory, but I was a bit worried when I got to thinking, so I... Listen, Georgia.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone in the house till I get home.
Oh, I won't, Steve.
Not anyone. Do you hear? Not anyone.
Hello, Smith.
Oh, wait a minute, Steve. I'll be right back.
Georgia, look. Hello, Smith.
Oh, Mr. Frank?
Yes, Mr. Frank.
Oh, thank goodness you've come. Please step in. It's this door, yeah, the lock on this door that I want
right.
fixed. Yeah, and just a minute, my husband's on the phone.
Surely.
Oh, Steve.
What happened?
Yeah, it's all right. Everything's all right now, Steve. You needn't worry.
Didn't I just hear you talking to someone?
Well, no, it was no one, Steve. It was just Mr. Frank, the locksmith.
The locksmith?
Yeah.
Georgia, listen. Listen, Georgia. That's what I was going to tell you. The police are on a new trail. They think maybe a locksmith. Georgia, you listening?
The
creeper's a locksmith. Get him out, quick.
What nice lipstick you use, Mrs. Grant.
Quiet! For heaven's sake! No.
Georgia. Hurry.
Hello.
Stop me before I kill more.
City desk? Pearlie Morgan Rumpot. We're still drunk, so what? Oh, shut up and listen. On that creeper story I just gave you, add this dope. The reward for his capture goes to the elevator boy. He heard Georgia Grant scream and called a cop. The creeper was shot running from the building. Yeah. Ironical, wasn't it? Imagine... The locksmith was the killer. The one man Georgia chased all day thinking he'd protect her. What an ending to a lovely, lovely redhead.
Animal world, there is the hunter and the hunted, hound and fox, hawk and sparrow, chicken and worm. But who is to judge precisely which is the pursuer or the pursued as we enter the chase? The Chase was created for the National Broadcasting Company by Lawrence Klee. Featured in tonight's cast were Jan Miner, John Raby, Leon Janney, William Keane, Sylvia Lee, and Donald Eucher. The Chase is directed and transcribed by Fred Way. Fred Collins speaking.
When all this weather's getting down, let's all along all quiet. Relief in the darkness all around, so call us all on my life.
Think of now 4 years and years.
get those seas and sniffle fears.
When the cold and sad is getting down, just call on Global Quinine.
Remember to be a pet.
This next one is also a new series, Chet Cheater's Tales from the Morgue, which is a series of short stories told by an old but obliging morgue attendant, a licensed embalmer, named, you guessed it, Chet Cheater. About half of these stories, these 95 episodes, feature a pretty likable southern gentleman who is by profession a manure hauler by the name of Elmer Corn. Somehow Elmer always finds himself involved in some inane predicament. That's the theme of the show tonight, Elmer and the Book of Absolute Truth.
M&J Audio Theater presents Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue.
Never mind the water, just come right in. Wade on through and have a seat. My name is Chet Cheddar. I am the morgue attendant and licensed embalmer. Unfortunately, I'm not a plumber. You see, our old rusty pipes just gave out on us last night, so the floor is full of water. It looks like the rats could not adapt to their marine-like environment. Many of them have drowned, you know. Now, a story to tell. Yes. Oh. It looks like one learned to swim. Survival of the fittest, you know. Yes, now, where was I? Ah, yes. Yes, we're returning to Biloxi today. Mr. Elmer Corn, that manure-hauling adventurer, is out in his backyard feeding the pigs.
All right. Now look here. Don't chew off each other's ears. There's plenty of rotten tomatoes for all of you. And gum. Look here now. Don't waller in that. You eat that. I sworn to goodness. They say pigs is the cleanest animals around, and I bound you they never seen the likes of you. And gum. That whirly bird sounds close. Huh. Ain't hardly be no closer. It's landing in my pasture. Look at the suits on the fellas coming out of that thing. Dressed to the nines. Shiny, brand new leather shoes. That tall one just stepped in a fresh cow patty, too. Howdy, fellas.
Hello.
Did you lose your way?
Well, if intelligence is correct, this should be the home of Elmer Corn.
Intelligence? Well, sir, you got it right. You found it. Did I win something?
I'm afraid not, Mr. Corn. I represent the state of Otto J. Williamsburg.
Huh.
Perhaps you've heard of the name.
Otto Williamsburg? Dogs, ain't that multi-billionaire what bought that Florida amusement park wacky land and then just closed her down like a month later saying he was bored with it?
Yes, Mr. Corn, you're correct. You see, I...
And I heard his wife took half his fortune in a divorce suit. Dad, yum, what a chump.
Please do not interrupt me, Mr. Corn.
Sorry.
The reason why I'm here is because Mr. Williamsburg wants to meet with you.
With me? Jiminy. Why in the world...
I'm not at liberty to discuss the details with you, Mr. Corn. But Mr. Williamsburg has a proposition for you. One that could make you a very rich man. It will all be explained to you when we arrive at the estate.
Oh.
Are you ready to go?
Well, sir, I ain't one for taking off with a bunch of strangers, but, well, dog, if you ain't got my curiosity roused. and I always wanted to take a ride in a helicopter. Okay, sir, I'll do it. Let me go dust off some of this dirt and splash a little cologne on my face, and then we'll go. And let's try to get back before the wrestling match is on TV, though, if we can.
Welcome to the Williamsburg Estate, Mr. Corn.
Thank you.
I trust your flight was uneventful.
Oh, it was dandy fine, sir. My stomach took a little turn when we took off, but I managed to keep things down.
Yes, 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 quite, quite. This way, Mr. Corn.
Oh.
Sir Williamsburg is in the activity room.
I hear gunshots. I didn't come at a bad time, did I?
Oh, no, no, no. It is a shooting gallery, Mr. Corn. Sir enjoys a practice session before noontime tea.
Oh, I see.
Begging your pardon, sir, your guest, Mr. Elmer Corn, has arrived.
Mercy's sake.
Bullseye.
Yeah.
Mr. Corn.
Howdy.
We meet at last. Come in.
Thank you, sir.
That'll be all for now, Jarvis.
Very good, sir. And might I say, terrific shooting today, sir.
Yowza sakes, what a game room. I tell you, this sure beats to death that old rickety pool table we got down at the city hall.
Yes. Well, would you believe I'm bored of all this, Mr. Corn? I search for entertainment. And what do I find?
Well,
television. Bah.
I know. Oh, damn. Come.
Emotion pictures. Wallowing in sexual excess.
Lord of mercy.
I seek a human adventure, Mr. Corn.
Oh.
One with real life experiences. But I am too old. Too old.
Well, now that ain't necessary. Good Lord, what in the world are you shooting at?
Ancient pottery vases from the Ming Dynasty, I believe.
Jiminy.
Mr. Corn, you wonder why I've asked you here.
Well, yes, sir. I suspect it wasn't just to show off your shooting skills to me, was it?
Yes, that is right, Mr. Corn. There is more to it than that. Very amusing, though. I enjoy reading small-town publications, Mr. Corn.
Uh-huh.
I came across an article in your Biloxi Gazette recently.
Oh, sakes alive. You read about the mole rats, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, you are quite the hero, Mr. Corn.
Well...
The peaceful village of Biloxi is overrun by giant mole rats.
Yeah.
Elmer Corn rallies forth to rid the town of its plague.
Those were mutant mole rats, too.
You are a brave man, Mr. Corn. A man that rises to the occasion when trouble is at hand. Which is exactly why I have chosen you.
Uh-oh. Chosen me for what?
To find something. Something I have spent my youth and millions of dollars to search for.
Which is?
The Book of Absolute Truth.
Book of Absolute Truth, you say?
Yes. It is a book or a scroll or perhaps a tablet.
Uh-huh.
But I believe it exists, Mr. Corn. It contains the answers to all of the questions man has asked in the past and will ever ask in the future.
Oh, I get you. Like what it tell, how they make a styrofoam and how they put the cheese in them cans?
No, no, no. I'm talking about secrets of the universe, Mr. Corn. The answers to the mysteries of life.
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered what happens after you die?
Well, yes, sir. I try not to dwell on it, though.
The answer would be in the Book of Absolute Truth.
Huh. Well, who you reckon wrote such a thing?
Legend has it, the author is God.
Oh, I almost figured that out myself. Listen, sir, Mr. Williamsburg, despite what the Biloxi Gazette says, I ain't no Arizona Jones.
Mm.
You scrape away all the hometown hero junk and you just got a manure hauler from Biloxi.
I would go myself, Mr. Corn, but you see, these feeble legs of mine barely carry me across the hallway. If you would retrieve the book for me, I will pay you $250,000.
Huh?
That is, even if you do not succeed, sound reasonable?
Oh, boy. $250,000? I could pay off my mortgage.
Hmm.
Have a little bit left over.
I would imagine you would have quite a bit left over, Mr. Corn. You'd be a fool to pass up this offer.
Yeah, I guess I'd kick myself if I didn't do it.
Hmm.
I guess when you hold that hefty chunk of change over my head like that, Mr. Williamsburg, I can't say nothing but, okay.
Excellent. Excellent. Your plane leaves at 5 tomorrow morning, Mr. Corn. It will drop you off in a small country near India called Kashtar. I believe I have traced the book to this location. You will find an old cafe called Idea. The manager's name is Ahmad. He will give you the leads to go on. Have a safe journey, Mr. Corn, and may you find adventure.
This is Kashtar. Well, it's a busy little community. I wonder what this sign up nailed up to this tree says. Beware outsider. Asha is watching you. Cursed be those who anger him. Huh. I guess this Asha fella is the local sheriff. Hey, there's what I'm looking for. Cafe Idiot. Supposed to ask for a feller named Ahmad. Now keep that in mind. Ahmad. Well, it's a hopping little journey. Huh. I might order me up a drink while I'm here. I've always wanted to try one of them zombies.
Pale face.
Me?
What's the matter? Are you lost or something?
No, sir. I just come here to...
Why you come here? You come to get nice tattoo, pale face.
No,
sir. You want to take this knife and carve your name on your chest?
Whoa, Nelly, no. No, sir, I'm a bleeder.
I want it quiet in here.
Don't stop things on my account. I just...
Look who come in to join party. Pale one say he no want I give him tattoo.
No, sir.
It is no good to give me offense, pale one.
Oh, well,
Sabu
sir.
Offend me one time. Tell him what happened, Sabu.
Oh,
I forget. Sabu no longer can talk since he lose his tongue to my knife.
Now, look, sir. I don't want to scuffle with you. Jim! I would be leaving this man alone, big and stupid one. Or the next bullet will be penetrating your head most severely.
All right. I will leave. But we may meet again, pale one. And you will not be so lucky next time, eh?
The Lord, if you ain't heaven sent, sir. Thanks. Much obliged.
Oh, no.
Whew. That man was going to cut notches in me with that butcher knife.
Oh, fool. He was only trying to frighten you.
He succeeded.
I am Ahmed. Oh. At your service, my friend.
Ahmed. Well, please meet your acquaintance, Ahmed.
I'm Elmer Corn, yes.
Oh.
Mr. Williamsburg informed me that you would be arriving today. You are seeking the Book of Absolute Truth, right?
Well, yes, sir, he is. I'm sent to look for it for him. But just between me and you and the lamppost, I'm not so sure this book exists.
Oh, yes, the book does exist, my friend.
Oh.
And there are many dangers in finding it. You see, Asha, the god of truth, looks over the book. He guards it well.
Asha.
Many have searched for the book, but none have lived to speak of it.
Lord.
Only the hermit knows where the book exists.
Hermit.
You must ask him. He lives at the bottom of Canyon of Death.
death. And you must be careful, my friend, because the pygmies live at the bottom of the canyon as well.
Pygmies?
And they have a taste for human flesh. Mm. And pale humans are a delicacy, you see.
Oh, my goodness. I never thought I'd ask this question. Can you point me the way to the Canyon of Death?
The Book of Absolute Truth. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, the hermit knows where the book resides.
Okay.
And the hermit will tell you, yes.
Good.
But you must swear an oath of secrecy, my friend.
Oh.
Tell anyone what I tell you now, and Asha will punish you with slow, torturous death.
Well,
your blood will boil. Your brains will melt. Your eyes will burst.
Oh, okay, all right. I ain't gonna tell nobody. Lord, mystery, you're making me sick. Where's that?
The book is located in the Cave of a Thousand Terrors. Certain death awaits he whose spirit is not pure. In order to find the cave, you must go to the...
Mercy sakes alive. The spear caught him right in the chest. Wonder where that... Oh, Lord. Those little fellers. I bet you them there are pygmies. All right, Elmer, you can talk your way out of this. Howdy there, fellers. I like that there fishing net you got. Got one like that myself over in Biloxi. Use it in Miller's Pond to catch shad. Now, listen up here. Y'all don't want to eat me. This old Biloxi hide is tougher than a wild turkey. No, don't go there. No. Now, come on now, fellas. Get this net off of me. Get it off me now. What are you going to do to me? Oh, Lord. Well, this is a fine how do you do. Yesterday about this time I was slopping hogs, and now I'm hanging by a rope over a boiling pot of water. Well, life does have its twist and turn. Say, feller, listen here. Y'all promise not to dunk me in that stew pot, and I'll go kill you a nice big old tiger. Heck, I'll even slaughter the dang thing and chicken fry you some steaks. How's that sound? Huh? Well, that was wasted breath.
Quiet! Quiet here! Stop those drums!
Well, we meet again, eh, pale one?
You're that fella from the bar. Howdy.
Where's your friend to save you now, eh, pale one? How you like now? I take my knife and carve your name on your chest, eh? Or maybe you like better. I cut this rope that you are hanging by, and you fall into hot water. You not be so pale then, would you, pale one?
Oh, I'd sure druther you didn't do that. Hey, it's Ogman. Howdy, Ogman.
Greetings, Elmer, my friend. I see you are playing with the pygmies. Yes, but playtime is over. Now then, you cut my friend down, or I fire at you with the fire stick of Asha.
The pygmies will ignore your threats, Ogman. They answer only to me.
I am thinking you are wrong. The fire stick has a louder voice than you do, my friend.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, now you are reacting appropriately.
No, I ain't used to such a thing.
Now take my friend down. Make sure that he is unharmed.
Easy, boys. Don't drop me in that stew pot.
You are feeling all right, my friend?
Yeah. Some jumbled nerves and some rope burns on my wrists. Looks like that stew I owe you.
The day will come, Ahmed, when you and I will come to blows.
Yes, that day will come, stupid one. But until then, go find someone else to play. Oh, I will ventilate you with a fire stick. Now then, Mr. Corn, you found the location of the Book of Absolute Truth?
Yes, sir. The hermit told me it was in this place called the Cave of a Thousand Terrors. But just as he's about to tell me where it's at, he got a spear in the chest.
The cave, yes. Well, you are being very lucky today, my friend. I know the location of the cave. Climb up on my horse. I will take you there now. Although, I must tell you, it is just a name. There are no more than a few hundred terrors in the cave. Let us go.
Well, all right. I see we're going to ride bareback. I haven't done that before. I'll tell you truthful, though. I ain't very good at handling no more than a couple of terrors.
You are amusing me greatly, Mr. Corn. Hey!
Dadgum. So this is a cave of a thousand terrors. Huh. I sure wish Achmed had come in here with me. It'd be nice to have someone to hide behind when them terrors start to crank up. But he said I had to come in here on my own. Whew. You know, it's been 15 minutes and I hadn't seen a single terror yet. It's kind of disappointing so far. I guess this cave will lead to the...
Stand still, mortal, and listen close to what I have to say.
Oh, where's that verse coming from?
You humans are so stupid. I am Asha, and I am omnipresent.
Asha?
You have come in search of the book.
Yeah.
And in order to retrieve it, you must confront two life-threatening terrors.
Two? I thought this was the Cave of a Thousand Terrors.
If you would rather confront a thousand terrors, I can arrange it.
Oh, no, sir. Two's fine. That's more than enough. It's bountiful.
Then shut up and listen to what I have to say, or I will destroy you now. First, you will confront a pack of rabid monkeys. Then, if you are still alive, you will find the piranha pool. Should you be smart enough to make it across these obstacles, the book will be yours, and you will be burdened with the task of escaping this cave. A task that I will see that you will not complete.
Well, sir. There's a door opening up on the side of the cave. It's... Lord. Monkeys. Foaming at the mouth. Oh, I ain't studying about getting no rabies. Oh, good Lord, come after me. Get out of here. Oh, man, dammit. I'm at the edge of some sort of pit. It's got water in it. Oh, sakes, that must be them piranhas. I gotta get across that pit somehow. There's a vine hanging from a branch. Oh, I hope it holds my weight. I gotta swing across this thing. Oh, here we go. Oh, I'm gonna cross my chest. All right. Please, Lord. I made it across. Cleared them two terrors at seconds flat. And there's a book over there on that big stone pedestal. I bet you that's it. Yes, it says right there on the cover. The Book of Absolute Truth. Well, I'd kind of like to thumb through this. But I guess I better get out of here. This book don't look very old. Well, let's see. I just swing back over that piranha pit. Take a run and dash past those monkeys and get out of here. That's all there is to it. I'll just put this book in my pocket. All right. I swung over it once. I can do it again. Train coming in. Lord of mercy! The rope broke! I'm in a pool of meaty fish! Dead gum! Somebody help me!
Mr. Corn, Ark Man, I will push one of the monkeys into the pool. It should attract the fish.
All right, do it.
I push the monkey in now. It's working, Ark Man. The piranhas are going to the monkey. Yes. Grab my hand, my friend. I pull you out now. You got it. There you go.
All right.
There you come.
Oh, thanks, Ark Man.
Yes.
Third time you saved my life.
Yes.
I'm going to share some of that quarter of a million with you.
No. You will get not one red cent, Mr. Corn.
Mr. Williamsburg.
Hmm.
What the heck are you doing here?
Well.
Look. Look, I found the book.
The book. Give me that worthless thing.
What are you ripping it up for? Don't rip it up. Have you gone out of brain crazy?
The book has blank pages, my friend. I fear that you have been cruelly deceived.
My movie has been ruined. I told you not to interfere when he entered the cave, Ackman.
What the heck is he talking about?
This is all being a game, Mr. Corn.
Huh?
The Book of Absolute Truth does not exist.
What? You mean that mean fella in the bar and the hermit and them pygmies?
They all work for Sir Williamsburg, Mr. Corn. This country belongs to him as well. And I feel that I work for him.
Well, you do not anymore, Ackman. You can begin looking for a new job immediately. Everything has been ruined. I'll tell you the truth, Mr. Corn. Cameras have been spread throughout this country. They are hidden, and they have been videotaping your every move. You were to live the adventure that I wish I could live myself. I told you how much I despise television and movies. But this was real, and it was going perfectly. Until Ahmed ruined it.
You informed me there would be no real dangers, Mr. Williamsburg. The piranha, the monkeys, they were real, they were genuine.
He almost
died.
How can you have a real adventure without real dangers? And yes, perhaps death. Were you to have survived, Mr. Corn, I would have paid you the amount we agreed upon. But as it stands, you get nothing.
I'm a 14-karat gold sucker. I was a little suspicious when that Absolute Truth book was in paperback. And that Asha feller talking to me, that was just you on a speaker, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, but I have an idea. This adventure does not have to end this way. The cameras are still rolling. I could have the ending that I wished for.
What?
Get back into the pool, Mr. Coyne.
What are you...
Fight for your life against the piranhas.
Mr. Williamsburg.
I will pay you if you survive.
Well, what are you doing? Don't shove me. Mr. Williams, shove me back into that meat-eating fish pool.
Get in there.
Mr. Williams, but watch out. Those rocks are loose. You're going to fall into the pool.
I'm slipping.
My goodness. He fell in. Grab my hand, Mr. Williamsburg.
Too late.
Grab my hand. Too late, Mr. Coyne. You cannot save him now. Don't fall in yourself. Come back here.
Oh, I wanted to punch his teeth in, but I didn't want him to get hit up by piranha. He was a lost case, Mr. Corn. Some people get a lot of money and they go crazy.
You ain't fooling. The only thing I got out of this is a story to tell the folks down in Biloxi.
Yes.
And hell, they ain't gonna swallow it.
Then come with me to the Idiot Cafe, Mr. Corn. We would drink many zombies and talk about good times.
Oh, heck, I'm all for it. Watch out for the rabid monkeys.
Well, that was our story for today. I'm in a bit of a spot here. I certainly know what it's like to be caught in a pool of water myself. Our busted pipes have gotten out of control. The water's almost up to the ceiling now. You may want to leave and return later when we have this watery mess cleared up. Until next time, a pleasant dreams.
You have just heard Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue. Today's installment, Elmer and the Book of Absolute Truth. The names and characters portrayed in this production are fictitious. Any similarities to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. A production by M&J Audio Theater.
Millions in Europe and Asia are going hungry and facing actual starvation. Therefore, it's up to us, the best-fed nation in the world, to tighten our belts. We can share a meal and save a life. And here's how. Buy only as much bread and other wheat products as you really need. Use rice, fats, and oils sparingly. Don't waste any food. Turn in your used fats and oils at the food store promptly. Plant a garden and raise as much of your family's food as you can. You are saving food for those who desperately need it when you buy less, especially when you use up those leftovers.
Anyway, that was Jet Cheater. The series, as I said earlier, comprises 95 episodes, most of which were done on a, I guess, somewhat speculative basis. Some 19 were done for NPR. And played at least some of them on NPR Playhouse. Others aired internationally in Australia and England. I can't tell you too much about exact datings. I know the first program, Highway of Death, was produced in 1989, and the remainder were done between then and 1995. Well, that does bring us to our next show here, which is an episode of X-1 from December the 6th of 1956. It's the adaptation of a Murray Leinster short story, If You Was a Mauchline, which was originally published in Galaxy magazine for September of 1951. Murray Leinster is one of my favorite science fiction writers, held in high regard for his excellent science fiction, and he has the awards to prove it, including the 1956 Hugo Award for his novel, Exploration Team. Will F. Jenkins, who wrote as Murray Leinster, was born in 1896 and passed away in 1975.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X. Tonight, the Murray Leinster story, If You Was a Mauchline.
Up to the last minute, I can't imagine that Mauchline is going to be the first planet that humans get off of, moving fast, breathing hard, and sweating copious. There isn't any reason for it. Everything was all quiet at the trading post. I was sitting on the front porch while Deeth, he's the Mauchline clerk. Looks a lot like a guy named Casey. Used to be a wiper on the Palmyra. He comes out on the porch.
Mr. Brinkley?
Morning, Date. How's business?
Yeah, not so good. There were a few wood Mauchlines in this morning.
Yeah, I saw. Kind of nice looking. Those big saucer eyes. Hey, what makes their noses wiggle like rabbits?
Well, I don't know, sir. I'm not a woods Mauchline.
Oh, sure. Sure, no offense. They buy much?
No, they didn't. They said the prices were too high.
Oh.
Yeah, they said they can get the same goods at the other trading post for half price.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to run a nice little monopoly for the company with another trading post opening up at half price.
What is it, sir?
Look at that little kid playing in the mud.
You mean the Mauchline kid? It's my cousin's niece.
I can't get over those little kids with the droopy mustaches like old man Bland. I gotta laugh every time.
Well, I understand. But you see, Mauchlines are getting much more human every day.
Hey, look at that. There go the trees on the landing field.
Yeah, but the relief ship isn't due for a month.
I never knew those trees to get up and walk away if there wasn't a ship due in. Yeah? There goes old Sally pulling up her roots. Well, this can't be any routine ship. I wish Brooks was back from the hills.
Hey, Captain Heine, over here.
All right, come on, let go of my hand. Yeah, nice to see you all again. Friends, yeah, sure. Friends.
I wish those Marklins were a little less friendly each time. It's like being a movie star.
Captain Heine.
Hey, what's that? We didn't send in a requisition for anything like that. Red hair and everything else.
Captain?
Relax, Brinkley. That is Inspector Caldwell. She's a troubleshooter for Sam Company.
They must have finally read those reports Brooks keeps sending in.
Look out for her. She's... Oh, good morning, Miss Caldwell.
Inspector Caldwell, please.
This is Joe Brinkley. He's the assistant manager of the company post.
Where's Brooks?
He's up in the mountains, ma'am.
We should have been here. I'm on Markland to check into this matter of a competitive trading post. Who's back of it? The company is supposed to have exclusive trading rights.
Brooks is trying to find out. The Marklands around the place always say the humans are off somewhere hunting or something. We've never seen them. They take the lady's luggage.
Yes, sir. It's a pleasure.
He looks a little familiar, your clerk.
He's a Markland. But he looks a lot like a man used to be a wiper on a Palmyra, Casey. I think he's on the Aldebaran run now.
Please conduct me to the trading post.
That afternoon, Brooks come down out of the hills with a bunch of woods Marklins that were guiding him. I took Inspector Caldwell over to meet him, and he gets one look at her red hair and other equipment, and he stops short.
Hey, what's this? She Marklin?
I beg your pardon?
This is Inspector Caldwell. She come in on a Palmyra today. This is Brooks, the head trader.
Well, am I glad to see you. I guess they finally read my reports in sector headquarters. You've come to check my request that the planet be abandoned?
Not at all. Marklin has great potentialities. Friendly natives. Trade should continue and increase.
But I explained,
All I'm interested in is why you allowed a competitive post to be established in our exclusive territory.
My reports cover that. Haven't you read them?
Of course not. I was given a briefing on the situation here and told to correct it. Well, now, let's get to it. Do they cut prices?
50%.
But lots of Marklins still trade with us, just out of friendship. They're real friendly, these Marklins.
Now, I'd like to know just...
Excuse me, Mr. Brinkley.
What is it, Dave?
A girl just brought you a compliment.
Oh? Well, now send her in and get a present for her.
Yes, sir.
50%. Well, if they want a trade war, we'll give it to them. We can cut prices if we have to. We have all the resources of the company behind us.
My dear Miss Caldwell, if you'd read any
Inspector
of my...
Inspector Caldwell.
Here she is, Mr. Brinkley.
Compliments, sir. Compliments.
Well, let's see him.
He's asleep.
Well, look at that. Ears like mine. The same bastion nose and everything. What do you know?
Kitsy, kitsy, kitsy.
Hey, what's your name?
Morano.
I can't remember ever seeing you before. Well, that's the way it goes. Hey, they take her in the post and give her a present.
And this way.
Thanks for the compliment. I'm greatly honored. Yeah, it's real cute, ain't it? Real human.
Human? Brinkley, you are going to be transferred out of here the instant the Palmyra gets back.
Why? You mean that girl? I'm giving her a present. What's the matter?
That's all you think about it? The callousness. You're revolting.
Miss Caldwell, I'm afraid maybe you don't exactly understand about parallel evolution here on Markland.
I gather it's been parallel enough. That will be all on that subject, if you please. In the morning, I shall want to go and inspect that other trading post.
We set out for the trading post the next day. Brooks stayed behind on account of he was peeved that she hadn't read his report. Anyway, she was cute as the bug, and he resented anyone with a figure like that in authority over him, especially without reading his report. Well, I tried to explain to Miss Caldwell that we just couldn't go in and rip up the opposition post.
Why not? They're poaching.
Marklins imitate humans. Now, if we start trouble, they'll start it too. Anything. Mayhem, murder, theft, bigamy.
Bigamy? You're worried about that?
Listen, Miss Caldwell, you've got to understand about Markland evolution.
I'm not interested.
Yeah, here, wait a minute. Now, this is a nest bush, see? There's about a dozen nests on it.
Hmm?
Now, only about two of them are ripe. Look.
Oh, there's a bird.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Now, see, the bush grows nests for the cacklebird, and the bird, well, fertilizes around the bush. It's even Steven. See, that's the way evolution works on Markland, like we were trying to tell you.
Mr. Brinkley, I am not interested in learning about the birds and the bees on Markland or any other planet from you. Now, let's get on to that trading post.
Naturally, when we got there, there was only a couple of Marklands hanging around. They told us the same story about the humans having gone off somewhere hunting dunderflies. When we got back to the company post, Inspector Caldwell, furious as a wet cacklebird, marched right into Brooks.
I have just ordered a price cut on all items on sale by 75%. I've also ordered unlimited credit for Mocklin customers. They want a trade war over there? I'll give it to them.
But you don't understand. There's a whole planet where they could have put another trading post without being discovered. Why put it so close to us?
That furnishes them with a ready-made market for human trade goods. And it furnished them with Mocklins trained to be interpreters and clerks. And it furnished them with a Mocklin head clerk, who is a very handsome young man, Mr. Brooks. He not only resembles you in every feature, but he even has a good many of your mannerisms. You should be very proud. Goodbye.
That's funny. Like me, huh?
That's right. Spitting image.
Funny as folks never brought him for a compliment present. How good's the likeness?
If he was wearing your clothes, I'd swear it was you.
Maybe. Joe, remember that time you went off hunting with Deeth and his folks?
Yeah, sure. We were after dunderflies. We caught about six of them.
You were wearing Markland clothes, weren't you?
Well, you know how they are. You're insulted if you don't.
Listen, did you come back after one day for tobacco and a bath?
No. No, we were way over at Tunlib Hill. Some Markland got killed and we had to bury him. It took 2 days.
Well, during that week, while you were off wearing Markland clothes, somebody came back here wearing your clothes. He got some tobacco and went out again. He looked just like you, Joe. Exactly. Nobody suspected it wasn't you.
Why should he want to do that?
He might have been checking to see if he could fool me.
Oh, that's a situation, ain't it?
I haven't mentioned it before, but I've been guessing at something like this. Marklands like to be human, and they have kids that look human. Well, look at the difference between Deeth and a Woods Markland. Well, maybe they can want to be smart like humans. And pretty soon they are, or their kids are. That rival trading post.
You figure there aren't any humans running it.
They're practicing with that.
You mean they might figure to get rid of us and have a couple of Marklands take our place? I don't believe that. Marklands like humans. They wouldn't harm humans for anything. They like to be just like them.
Listen, Joe. Miss Caldwell is the first human woman on Markland, isn't she?
Yeah. Why?
And she's got red hair. The first woman the Marklands see, and with red hair. You know how Marklands admire humans. With luck, it ought to turn up soon. Boy, she's going to take it hard if it does. Women hate to be wrong. But it's about our only chance. Listen, Joe, we've got to have some check between us.
What for?
Well, if there's a Markland that looks like me and one that looks like you, we better have a signal. Look, I'll cough twice, like this. And you whistle back. That way we'll know it's us.
Okay.
Try it. Good, good. That way we'll know we're us.
Brooks starts off the next morning to visit the other trading post and see the Markland that looks so much like him. Before he goes, we do our little routine. It's about 2 weeks till the Palmyra is due back. That's pretty close figuring, waiting for what we're waiting for. I was thinking how good life was on Markland up to now, and that made me kind of a little sad. But it's the end, there's no doubt about it. Markland sure admire humans. They produce kids that look like them. You can't help liking Marklands. But I can see what Brooks means. Marklands loose among humans, outsmarting them as their kids grow up, just about taking over in the galaxy. When they come back from the other trading post, we went through the secret business again. In the meantime, Inspector Caldwell was busy with her trade war. She cut prices once, twice, finally six times, until 3 days before the Palmyra is due back, our goods are marked at exactly 1% of what they cost the month before. Brooks was getting more and more nervous. Seemed like he was falling kind of in love with a snappy little inspector. He was getting jumpy, waiting for her to get her big surprise. She was making out merchandise requisitions one morning when Deeth come in smiling friendly at her.
Inspector Caldwell?
Oh, what is it, Deeth?
There's a compliment for you.
What?
Three of them.
What is he talking about?
Joe, this is it. Deeth, show him in.
Now, look, I haven't got time for public relations. These inventories
are... Here we are.
Inspector Caldwell, three compliments.
Compliment, compliment, compliment.
Now, let's see him.
Very pretty, very human, no? Oh, no. No, that's impossible. No.
Very pretty. Red hair, all three of them. Red hair.
Very pretty red hair. Same as human lady. Very pretty.
All right, Deeth. Take her out and give her some presents.
This way. Come on.
But that's impossible. Those babies, three of them, they couldn't.
They do. They look exactly like you. That's what we were trying to tell you.
I've only been here a month.
Marklin babies get born real fast. They sure admire humans. It's kind of friendly when you think about it.
You mean they can make their babies look like anybody they want?
It was all in my reports. They've got a queer sort of evolution here on Marklin. Babies here inherit desired characteristics, not acquired characteristics, desired ones. And what could be more desirable than you? Red hair and all.
Oh, but you and Brinkley...
Oh. You couldn't help it, dear, really.
But I hated you. I thought that...
Now, look, darling. Joe.
Yeah?
Do me a favor, will you?
Sure, what?
Get out of here.
Oh, okay.
And stay away for a while.
Sure, only one thing.
What?
This. Okay, then I'll leave you two together. About 2 days later, the Palmyra boomed down out of the sky. We were all packed up waiting on the field when the trees finished getting out of the way. I kept thinking, no matter what, Marklins sure are friendly. They sure do admire humans. I could see them crew members with Liberty heading off from the field with a whole gang of laughing, singing Marklins following each one of them. After a while, Cap Haney came over in a freight truck.
It's a pleasure, I tell you, to see these Marklins. I just came here from Welch's planet. The natives there are suspicious, unfriendly, and if you're not watching, they'll steal your gold teeth. But Marklin...
Captain Haney, don't give orders to unload your cargo.
What do you mean?
We are abandoning the post.
What?
We are leaving Marklin completely.
Sam Company pulling out when there's still a mill credit to be made? I don't believe it.
I have authority to order the move, and Mr. Brooks has convinced me of the necessity for it.
Now, Inspector, I know the company doesn't like to give in to competition.
There isn't any competition.
Well, I thought...
Miss Caldwell's right. That other trading post is purely a Marklin enterprise. They bought our goods from us and pretended to sell them at half price, and we cut our prices, so they bought more goods from us and went on. Some Marklin must have thought it'd be nice to be a smart businessman, so his kids would be smart businessmen. Too smart. We'll close up this post before the Marklins think of something else.
What? What do they think of?
If they got loose from this planet, if they can pass as humans, their kids could take over human civilization. How would you like that?
I see, yeah.
You'd better make ready to blast off, Captain.
Yeah, but I got the B section off on shore, Liberty. Men are scattered all over the place.
With Marklins?
Sure, with Marklins. You know how it is. Regular party. Fancy Marklin clothes, food, liquor.
Captain, you'd better sound the emergency recall.
Yeah, I see what you mean right away.
Well, that accounts for all but about five of them.
They're coming across the field now.
Keep that line straight for the hatch. We got to count off.
Four, five. Yeah, they're all in line.
I'll check against the roster.
Wait a minute. There's another one coming. Look. By that tree.
There can't be. I've got 38 men lined up already. 38, that's a full count.
That's a human.
He's wearing Mocklin clothes.
It looks like Pete Werber from the engine crew.
Hey, wait. Wait for me. Wait.
Yeah, but it can't be. Werber's already checked in. There he is in line.
Wait for me.
Hey, whoa. Where'd you come from?
I couldn't find my clothes. You see, I was in these Mocklin clothes when the signal went off. I was trying to find my clothes.
Werber, look over there in the line.
Where? Hey, that's my clothes. That guy. He looks just like me. Now, what's the idea?
Hey, you! Come over here!
Yes, sir.
What's the idea?
All right, you caught me. I'm a Mocklin.
He stole my clothes.
Why did you do it?
Oh, we Mocklins like humans so much, I thought it would be nice to make a trip to Earth and see more humans.
How come he looks like me?
My parents planned it 5 years ago when you came here first. They made me look like this wonderful human and hid me till now.
You'd give me back my clothes?
Well, of course. I wouldn't want to make any difficulties for humans.
He took it as a joke on him. He talked English as good as anybody. It was hard to tell which was the Mocklin and which the human guy. So we let him keep the human uniform, and he was very grateful. We took off after that, and the Mocklin stood around and laughed and waved and threw flowers as we closed the hatches. Pretty soon the Palmyra was pushing up through the atmosphere. And just before the auxiliary circuits went on during the jump to overdrive, we all stood around in the astrogator's dome with a screen turned up to high mag and watched as Mocklin faded into a round cantaloupe behind us.
It's a shame. Sure was a pretty planet. Real friendly.
Too friendly. I still have the shivers, thinking we almost took a Mocklin off with us.
Now, the other crew had been on Mocklin long enough to have a double. 5 years is a safety margin. Takes them that long to grow up.
We were lucky, huh, Joe?
Huh? What?
I said we were lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. We sure are. I guess I was the only one who felt a little different from the others about leaving Mocklin. I mean, Mocklin's a swell folks, and it seemed a shame. There'd be an order out that no human ship is allowed to land on Mocklin. But I was thinking, I'll save my money, and those compliments, those three little kids that look just like Inspector Caldwell, in about 5 years they'll be grown, and I'll buy me a little private ship and shove off for Mocklin again. And I'll pick me one of those three red-headed gals and marry her Mocklin style and bring her out to a human colony planet. We'll have kids with brains, top-level brains. That's easy. If she wants it, that's the way the kids will be born. I'll have to bring other Mocklins out, too, and start them passing for humans. My kids are going to need other Mocklins to marry, aren't they? It's not that I don't like humans. I do. If the fellow I look like, Joe Brinkley, hadn't gotten killed accidental on that hunting trip, I never would have thought of taking his place and being Joe Brinkley. That's what I was thinking when Brooke suddenly got an idea.
Wait a minute. Joe, you and I were on Mocklin more than 5 years.
Yeah? So?
One thing. And everything's all right.
I mean, you can't blame me for wanting to live among humans, can you? Wouldn't you, if you was a Mocklin?
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features another fascinating For Your Information column written by Willie Ley. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you If You Was a Mocklin, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Murray Leinster and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Joseph Julian, Patricia Wheel, Carl Weber, Ralph Camargo, Helen Gerald, Stan Early, John Marley, and Dick Janiver. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Of the secrets that lie buried with the dead, none is more challenging, none more tantalizing than the secret which the woman named Tofana took with her to the grave. To no one in her own time did she reveal it, and no one since has been able to find the key to it. But perhaps that is as it should be, for it is a secret which, if it were ever again unlocked, could only spread misery and death throughout the world.
The woman, Tofana, was a resident of Palermo in the latter days of the 17th century. And it is no coincidence that it was those same days which witnessed a wave of poisoning that swept like a plague across the whole of Europe. The authorities were baffled.
There can be no question the Pope was poisoned. He did not die a natural death.
Nor did Ercole Sturazzi, nor Lorenzo Costia, nor Alfonso de Cordova.
I know. They were murdered, every one of them. We've examined their food, their wine, everything they took into their bodies for 24 hours before their death. We've never come upon a single trace of it anywhere.
Not once did they discover any remnants of the substance that had caused death. And then, on the 10th day of August of that year, a man named Francesco Orsini, a poet and a philosopher, came to them in a state of great agitation.
Gentlemen, you must save me.
What is this paper you have?
It was asleep under my door this morning.
Let me see. Oh, Francesco Orsini, prepare yourself. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon of August 12th, you will die.
They are going to poison me.
Fortunately, they have forewarned us, so we can prevent.
How?
For the next 2 days, my dear Orsini, you will drink neither water nor wine, and you will eat no food whatsoever. And on the afternoon of the 12th, you will lock yourself in your study. One of my men will be with you to guard you. It will be absolutely
impossible. For 2 whole days, Francesco Orsini fasted. And at the appointed time, he was locked in his house under armed guard.
I was in the room with him when it happened. Before I could send for help, he was dead.
It was not until months later that the woman, Tofana, was brought into the torture chambers to be questioned. They had reason to believe that she knew more than she admitted, and they had ways of extracting knowledge.
Yes, I will confess.
You are, I believe, a brewer of poisons by profession?
When men want the poison, they come to me.
What do you call this concoction you brew for them?
It's called Acqua Tofana.
Why have we never been able to find traces of it?
Because you look for them too late. If you wanted to see the poison that killed the Pope in April, you would have to examine the wine in December.
In other words, the action of the poison is delayed 5 months?
5 a month, or 5 a week, or 5 hours. Whatever his desire.
And how is it possible? What is the secret of this time potion?
You can kill me if you like. But the secret of my time potion dies with me.
Yes, this was the Acqua Tofana, the potion that had caused the death of no less than 600 men. A poison which could be so compounded as to cause death at any desired time after it had been administered. This was the secret which Tofana would not surrender even to those who tortured her. The secret which died with her. A secret incredible but true.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
Judge Abraham Fuller of Newton, Massachusetts, was so fanatically opposed to debts that when a physician was called to write out his death certificate, the doctor found his fee in the dead man's clenched fist, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about an unusual railway.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've made it. Well, made it to the last break anyway. But I can promise this really is the last break.
Cable cars in San Francisco have added charm and transportation for many years. Equally unusual is the Cliff Railway near Lynmouth, England. It has 900 feet of rails bolted to the solid rock of a cliff, and its two cars are operated with water. Water flows into the tank of the car at the top, and as it starts down, it pulls up the other car, which has been lightened by draining its water tank. Believe it or not.
And now, and just before we go to music, is our last dramatic presentation for the evening.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. A Ghost Story by Mark Twain. I took a large room far up Broadway, in a huge old building whose upper stories had been wholly unoccupied for years until I came. The place had long been given up to dust and cobwebs, to solitude and silence. I seemed groping among the tombs and invading the privacy of the dead that first night I climbed up to my quarters. For the first time in my life, a superstitious dread came over me, and as I turned a dark angle of the stairway, and an invisible cobweb swung its lazy woof in my face and clung there, I shuddered as one who had encountered a phantom. I was glad enough when I reached my room and locked out the mould and darkness. A cheery fire was burning in the grate, and I sat down before it with a comforting sense of relief. For 2 hours I sat there thinking of bygone times, recalling old scenes and summoning half-forgotten faces out of the mists of the past. Listening, in fancy, to voices that long ago grew silent for all time, and to once familiar songs that nobody sings now. And as my reverie softened down to a sadder and sadder pathos, the shrieking of the winds outside softened to a wail, the angry beating of the rain against the panes diminished to a tranquil patter, and one by one the noises in the street subsided until the hurrying footsteps of the last belated straggler died away in the distance and left no sound behind. The fire had burned low. A sense of loneliness crept over me. I arose and undressed, moving on tiptoe about the room, doing stealthily what I had to do, as if I were environed by sleeping enemies whose slumbers it would be fatal to break. I covered up in bed and lay listening to the rain and wind and the faint creak of distant shutters till they lulled me to sleep. I slept profoundly, but how long I do not know. All at once I found myself awake and filled with a shuddering expectancy. All was still, all but my own heart. I could hear it beat. Presently, the bedclothes began to slip away slowly towards the foot of the bed, as if someone were pulling them. I could not stir, I could not speak. Still, the blanket slipped deliberately away till my breast was uncovered. Then, with great effort, I seized them and drew them over my head. I waited, listened, waited. Once more that steady pull began, and once more I lay torpid a century of dragging seconds till my breast was naked again. At last I roused my energies and snatched the covers back to their place and held them with a strong grip. I waited. By and by I felt a faint tug, and took a fresh grip. The tug strengthened to a steady strain. It grew stronger and stronger. My hold parted, and for the third time the blanket slid away. I groaned. An answering groan came from the foot of the bed. Beaded drops of sweat stood upon my forehead. I was more dead than alive. Presently I heard a heavy footstep in my room. The step of an elephant, it seemed to me. It was not like anything human. But it was moving from me. There was relief in that. I heard it approach the door, pass out without moving bolt or lock. and wander away among the dismal corridors, straining the floors and joists till they creaked again as it passed. And then silence reigned once more. When my excitement had calmed, I said to myself, "This is a dream, simply a hideous dream." And so I lay thinking it over until I convinced myself that it was a dream. And then a comforting laugh relaxed my lips, and I was happy again. I got up and struck a light. When I found the locks and bolts were just as I had left them, another soothing laugh welled in my heart and rippled from my lips. I took my pipe and lit it, and was just sitting down before the fire when down went the pipe out of my nerveless fingers. The blood forsook my cheeks, and my placid breathing was cut short with a gasp. In the ashes on the hearth, side by side with my own bare footprint, was another, so vast that in comparison mine was but an infant's. That I had had a visitor, the elephant tread, was explained. I put out the light and returned to bed, palsied with fear. I lay a long time, peering into the darkness and listening. Then I heard a grating noise overhead, like the dragging of a heavy body across the floor. Then the throwing down of the body, and the shaking of my windows in response to the concussion. In distant parts of the building I heard the muffled slamming of doors. I heard, at intervals, stealthy footsteps creeping in and out among the corridors and up and down the stairs. Sometimes these noises approached my door, hesitated, and went away again. I heard the clanking of chains faintly in remote passages, and listened while the clanking grew nearer, while it wearily climbed the stairways, marking each move by the loose surplus of chain that fell with an accented rattle upon each succeeding step as the goblin that bore it advanced. I heard muttered sentences, half-uttered screams that seemed smothered violently, and the swish of invisible garments and the rush of invisible wings. Then I became conscious that my chamber was invaded, that I was not alone. I heard sighs and breathing about my bed, and mysterious whisperings. Three little spheres of phosphorescent light appeared on the ceiling directly over my head, clung and glowed there for a moment, and then dropped. Two of them upon my face and one upon the pillow. They spattered liquidly and felt warm. Intuition told me that they had turned to gouts of blood as they fell, and needed no light to satisfy myself of that. Then I saw pallid faces, dimly luminous, and white, uplifted hands, floating bodiless in the air, floating a moment and then disappearing. The whispering ceased, and the voices and the sounds, and a solemn stillness followed. I waited and listened. I felt that I must have light or die. I was weak with fear. I slowly raised myself toward a sitting posture, and my face came in contact with a clammy hand. All strength went from me, apparently, and I fell back like a stricken invalid. Then I heard the rustle of a garment. It seemed to pass to the door and go out. When everything was still once more, I crept out of bed, sick and feeble, and lit the gas with a hand that trembled as if it were aged with 100 years. The light brought out some little cheer to my spirits. I sat down and fell into a dreamy contemplation of that great footprint in the ashes. By and by its outlines began to waver and grow dim. I glanced up, and the broad gas flame was slowly wilting away. In the same moment I heard that elephantine tread again. I noted its approach nearer and nearer along the musty halls, and dimmer the light waned. The tread reached my very door and paused. The light had dwindled to a sickly blue, and all things about me were in a spectral twilight. The door did not open, and yet I felt a faint gust of air fan my cheek, and presently was conscious of a huge, cloudy presence before me. I watched it with fascinated eyes. A pale glow stole over the thing. Gradually, its cloudy folds took shape. An arm appeared, then legs, then a body, and at last a great sad face looked out of the vapor. Stripped of its filmy housings, naked, muscular, and comely, the majestic Cardiff giant loomed above me. Oh, my misery vanished, for a child might know that no harm could come with that benignant countenance. My cheerful spirits returned at once, and in sympathy with them the gas turned up brightly again. Never a lone outcast was so glad to welcome company as I was to greet the friendly giant. I said, "Why, is it nobody but you? Do you know I have been scared to death for the last 2 or 3 hours? I am most honestly glad to see you. I wish I had a chair. Here, here, don't try to sit down in that thing." But it was too late. He was in before I could stop him, and down he went. I never saw a chair slivered so in my life. "Stop, stop, you'll ruin it." Too late. There was another crash, and another chair was resolved into its original elements. "Confound it! Haven't you any judgment at all? Do you want to ruin all the furniture on the place? Here, here, you petrified fool." But it was no use. Before I could arrest him, he sat down on the bed, and it was a melancholy ruin. "Now, what sort of way is that to do? First, you come lumbering about the place, bringing a legion of vagabond goblins along with you to worry me to death. And then, when I overlook an indelicacy of costume, which would not be tolerated anywhere by cultivated people except in a respectable theater, and not even there if the nudity were of your sex, you repay me by wrecking all the furniture you can find to sit down on. And why will you? You damage yourself as much as you do me. You have broken off the end of your spinal column and littered up the floor with the chips of your hands till the place looks like a marble yard. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You are big enough to know better." "Well, I will not break any more furniture, but what am I to do? I had not a chance to sit down for a century." And the tears came into his eyes. "Poor devil," I said. "I should not have been so harsh with you. And you are an orphan, too, no doubt. But sit down on the floor here. Nothing else can stand your weight. And, besides, we cannot be sociable with you away up there above me. I want you down where I can perch on this high counting-house stool and gossip with you face to face." So he sat down on the floor and lit a pipe which I gave him, threw one of my red blankets over his shoulders, inverted my sitz-bath on his head, helmet fashion, and made himself picturesque and comfortable. Then he crossed his ankles while I renewed the fire and exposed the flat honeycomb bottoms of his prodigious feet to the grateful warmth. "What is the matter with the bottom of your feet and the back of your legs, that they are gouged up so?" "Infernal chilblains, I caught them clear up to the back of my head, roosting out there under the Newell's farm. But I love this place, I love it as one loves his old home. There is no peace for me like the peace I feel when I am there." We talked along for an hour, and then I noticed that he looked tired, and I spoke of it. "Tired?" he said. "Well, I should think so. And now I will tell you all about it, since you have treated me so well. I am the spirit of the petrified man that lies across the street, there, in the museum. I am the ghost of the Cardiff Giant. I can have no rest, no peace, till they have given that poor body burial again. Now, what was the most natural thing for me to do? To make men satisfy this wish. Terrify them into it. Haunt the place where the body lay. So I haunted the museum night after night. I got the other spirits to help me. But it did no good, for nobody ever came to the museum at midnight. Then it occurred to me to come over the way and haunt this place a little. I felt that if I ever got a hearing, I must succeed. For I had the most efficient company that tradition could furnish. Night after night we have shivered around through these mildewed halls, dragging chains, groaning, whispering, tramping up and down stairs, till, to tell you the truth, I am almost worn out. But when I saw a little light in your room tonight, I roused my energies again and went at it with a deal of the old freshness. But I am tired out, entirely fagged out. Give me, I beseech you, give me some hope." I lit off my perch in a burst of excitement and exclaimed, "This transcends everything, everything that ever did occur. Why, you poor blundering old fossil, you have had all your trouble for nothing. You have been haunting a plaster cast of yourself. The real Cardiff Giant is in Albany. Confound it, don't you know your own remains?" I never saw such an eloquent look of shame, of pitiable humiliation, overspread a countenance before. The petrified man rose slowly to his feet and said, "Honestly, is that true?" "As true as I am sitting here." He took the pipe from his mouth and laid it on the mantel, then stood irresolute a moment. unconsciously from old habit, thrusting his hands where his pantaloon pocket should have been and meditatively dropping his chin on his breast, and finally said, "Well, I never felt so absurd before. The petrified man has sold everything else, and now the mean fraud has ended by selling his own ghost. My son, if there was any charity left in your heart for a poor, friendless phantom like me, don't let this get out. Think how you would feel if you had made such an ass of yourself." I heard his stately tramp die away, step by step, down the stairs and out into the deserted street, and felt sorry that he had gone, poor fellow, and sorrier still that he had carried off my red blanket and my bathtub. End of A Ghost Story by Mark Twain.
Johnny promised to marry her. She fears he's with some fair one and gone. There's something that ails him and she don't know what it is. And she's weary of lying alone. Johnny came at the appointed hour. Tapped at the window so slow. This fair maid arose and she hurried on her clothes, and she bid her true love welcome home. She took him by the hand and she laid him down. Felt he was as cold as the clay. She said, "My dearest dear, if I only had my wish, this long night would never turn to day. Oh, where is your soft bed of down, my love? Where is your white holland sheet? And where is the fair maid who watches over you as you lie in your long dreamless sleep? The sea is my soft bed of down, my love. The sand is my white holland sheet. And the long hungry worms, they do feed off of me as I lie every night in the deep. Oh, when shall I see you, my love?" she cried. "When shall I see you again? When little fishes fly and the seas they do run dry and the hard rocks do melt with the sun. When little fishes fly and the seas they do run dry and the hard rocks do melt with the sun."
Cowpoke went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, a-plowing through the ragged skies, and up a cloudy draw. The ghost heard in the sky. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny and their hot red he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard and he heard their mournful cry.
Give me a
ghost riders in the sky. Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, and shirts all soaked with sweat. They're riding hard to catch that herd, but they ain't caught 'em yet. 'Cause they got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting flame and fire. As they ride on, hear them cry. The riders loped on by a man, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell, a riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, a-trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Hippie-I-O. The ghost riders in the sky. Yippee-i-yo, yippee-i-yo, yippee-i-yo.
You didn't see me climb through the window. Nobody had to open that door. I just climbed right through the wall, and I want you, one and all, to stand aside and let me have the floor. Take a look, I'm not such a stranger. Here's the face you cookies all ought to know. You can tell me I'm not wanted, but the joints will still be haunted, 'cause I'm the ghost of Smokey Joe. Remember when I kicked the bucket in my mansion up on Stryver's Row? When they came and took me off in a zillion-dollar coffin, 'cause I'm the ghost of Smokey Joe. Tell me, do you remember Minnie?
Yeah, we remember Minnie.
That frail I never found.
You'll never recognize your Minnie.
You mean to say that Minnie quit kicking the gong around? I've got a date on my estate down in Hades. Call my chariot so I can go. And should the boot you're walking, just tell her you've been talking to the ghost of Smokey Joe. Yes, I remember Minnie. She's that frill I never found. You mean to say that Minnie quit kicking the gong around? I've got a day. Down in Hades. Oh, Jerry, so I can go. And should the moose you're walking, just tell her you've been talking to the ghost of Smokey. He did it.
The ghost.
'Tis time, my dear.